Well, good morning everyone, and welcome to our monthly Bible study for the month of April. And we're working our way through the book of Genesis, and we've reached chapter 21. So if you've got a Bible and would like to follow this with me, Genesis 21. And this is the chapter in which God's promise of an heir is fulfilled with the birth of Isaac. But the problems surrounding the preserving of the Messiah seed still remain. Isaac's relationship to Ishmael and the testing of faith, as we read this chapter, will prove great challenges for Abraham. So verse 1. Now, the Lord was gracious to Sarah, as he had said, and the Lord did for Sarah what he had promised. So the Lord visits Sarah as he had promised. It's repeated twice to emphasize to us that this is exactly, in every detail, what God had promised to do. Verse 2. Sarah became pregnant and bore a son to Abraham in his old age, at the very time God had promised him. Abraham gave the name Isaac to the son Sarah bore him. When his son Isaac was 8 days old, Abraham circumcised him as God commanded him. So Abraham names the son Isaac and circumcises him in obedience to God's covenant, which we read about and was recorded there back in chapter 17. And the marvel of this birth is expressed in the name Isaac, which means to laugh. And for Sarah, it's now a laugh of joy. It's a laugh of delight. Verse 5. Abraham was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born to him. And Sarah said, God has brought me laughter, and everyone who hears about this will laugh or delight with me. The note there of Abraham's age, 100 years, is important. For we remember that when Ishmael was born, Abraham was 86 years of age. We read of that in chapter 16. So Ishmael is 14 years old when Isaac is born. That's quite important in the account, because some traditions, particularly Catholic traditions, and I've seen a number of children's books used in Bible-believing churches that recount the story of Hagar here in chapter 21. And I've notes from the illustrations and the story that they have Ishmael as a baby, an infant in baby clothes under a bush. But it's wrong. He was 14 at the birth of Isaac. So verse 8. The child grew and was weaned. And on the day Isaac was weaned, Abraham held a great feast. And at this point in the story, the whole incident of the happening with Hagar occurs after Isaac was weaned. Now, commentators have varied views on what age a Jewish child would be weaned, ranging from the lowest of 3 years to some who think it would be 5, 6 or even 7. But if we take it at its lowest point of 3 years, Ishmael would be now a young man of 17, 14 years of age when Isaac was born, 3 years weaning, so at the very least, he would be a young man of 17 when this event takes place. Verse 9. But Sarah saw that the son whom Hagar, the Egyptian, had borne to Abraham was mocking. Sarah laughs with joy and rejoices, but not everyone was laughing that way. The Hebrew word that some translate laugh here is better translated, as in the NIV, with this word mocking, mockery. Tiny little baby infant couldn't act like that, of course. This is obviously the unbelief and derision of a 17, 18-year-old, which was had been probably caught from his mother. Both of them think Ishmael is the true heir. And suddenly, along comes this new child, pushing their noses out. Well, Ishmael's not going to be replaced. And Ishmael didn't believe all that God had said and promised to the family about an heir. And Sarah saw this mockery, day after day, continual mocking and contempt. Verse 10. And she said to Abraham, "Get rid of that slave woman and her son, for that slave woman's son will never share in the inheritance with my son Isaac." Now again, scholars vary in their interpretation of this verse. Some, in fact, probably most, that certainly that I've read, think that this is Sarah being really peevish and horrible in the way she's dealing with and treating Hagar. Some others, and I find myself with these others, I find myself with them because of verse 12, which we'll come to in a moment. Some of them see Sarah's actions here quite differently. Verse 11. The matter distressed Abraham greatly because it concerned his son. Abraham is upset. Very naturally, he wants to keep the family together. And yet, right at the very beginning, when God made his promises of a Messiah seed to bring salvation to the nations, right at the beginning, God called Abram to leave the unbelieving pagan world and to move with God to establish a godly people, which eventually will become the New Testament church. And the two, unbelievers and believers, should never mix. In the sense of the way that they live, who they're following, who they've given their allegiance to. And Abram knew about the separation of God's people from the unbelieving world. But I just seek to apply this a little bit. Haven't you noticed this very much yourself? Oh, you can know and hold strongly to the clear teaching of God's word and instruction that you find there until it begins to affect you personally. So the Christian can say, "I know that God tells us never to neglect meeting together, that we should never let any other thing stop us from coming together on a Sunday at every opportunity, or from meeting to pray together, or from meeting to studying the Bible." Absolutely. I'm 100%, I know the truth of that. But then comes the offer of promotion at work. The promotion that you've been angling for a long time, or a new job, which if taken will mean that you won't actually be able to attend church very much anymore. And we begin to rationalise it. Well, we know the clear teaching, but now it's beginning to affect us, and we say, "Well, I'm sure God understands." Or that dream house that at last we've got a chance to move to. It doesn't really matter that there isn't a Bible-believing church within 50 miles. No way that we could ever have Christian fellowship again. We know the clear teaching, but when it begins to affect us personally, we're all for the teaching until it challenges me and affects me. But Abraham knew God's clear teaching on separation from an unbelieving world. But when it comes personally into his own family with Ishmael, who he'd looked after, he taught, he'd cared for upwards of maybe 16, 17, 18 years, Abraham thought, well, we can work it out without that God-taught separation business. And it was Sarah, his wife, who sees the problem. And the problem is about the heir. It's about the inheritance that God had promised. It's what she says, isn't it? Get rid of that slave woman and her son, for that slave woman's son will never share in the inheritance with my son Isaac. And what makes me lean towards the interpretation that this is not Sarah being horrible or peevish is because God says that Sarah is right. And tells Abram to listen to Sarah. Verse 12. God said to him, do not be so distressed about the boy and your maidservant. Listen to whatever Sarah tells you, because it is through Isaac that your offspring will be reckoned. And Christian, listening to this, will know, certainly Christian husbands, should I say, I suppose listening to this, will know how many times that their Christian wives have been right in family decisions. God says, listen to her, because it's through Isaac that the seed will be reckoned. That was the issue. Hagar and Ishmael didn't believe this promise of God. They didn't believe God's word. Verse 13. God says, I will make the son of the maidservant into a nation also, because he is your offspring. Although Isaac is the true heir, Ishmael will be blessed because of his relationship to Abraham. And so as we begin to close this down, let's just have a look now at this Hagar leaving incident. Verse 14. Early the next morning, Abraham took some food and a skin of water and gave them to Hagar. He set them on her shoulders and sent her off with the boy, and she went on her way and wandered in the desert of Beersheba. When the water in the skin was gone, she put the boy under one of the bushes, and then she went off and sat down nearby about a bow shot away. For she thought, I cannot watch the boy die. And as she sat there nearby, she began to sob. Now, liberal scholars have an absolute field day with this, as they portray Abraham as a mean, uncaring, horrible man, not providing adequate provision. All he does is give just a bit of water and a bit of bread. But it's probably, I would suggest to you, from the way that we read how Abraham longed, wanted them not to leave, he wanted them to stay, that he envisaged they've got to move out, but they're not going to move far. So he just gives them what he believes is very adequate for just moving a little distance away. And the trouble that Hagar gets into appears to come from the description that on leaving, instead of just moving away a little distance, on leaving, she wanders off in the desert. When the water in the skin was gone, she put the boy under one of the bushes. She puts the lad in the shade of a bush, but with no water in the blazing desert sun, both of them soon get very dehydrated. Verse 16, then she went off and sat down nearby, about a bowshot away, for she thought, I cannot watch the boy die. And as she sat there nearby, she began to sob. So now both of them are in terrible trouble, and both cry out in their distress and in their trouble. Both cry out to God, and that often happens when people get into trouble. Verse 17, God heard the boy crying, and the angel of God called to Hagar from heaven and said to her, What is the matter, Hagar? Do not be afraid. God has heard the boy crying as he lies there. Lift the boy up and take him by the hand, for I will make him into a great nation. God hears them, tells Hagar to take the lad by the hand. So it's obviously not a baby. Verse 19, then God opened her eyes and she saw a well of water. So she went and filled the skin with water and gave the boy a drink. God was with the boy as he grew up. He lived in the desert and became an archer. So God does hear them and tells Hagar to take the lad by the hand, and they survive. Verse 21, while he was living in the desert of Paran, his mother got a wife for him from Egypt. And here we see again God at work. Yes, he's provided a way of rescue for them. But now God's way is to separate the unbelieving seed of Satan from the God-believing, faith-following seed. The unbelievers will live in Paran, and a wife is gained for Ishmael from Egypt. And we Christians guard this today, this separation of the believing, the Christian, from the unbelieving world. Obviously, we have Christian love for the unbeliever, but we have Christian love for them only to seek to win them to Jesus, never to align ourselves with them and their way of life and their aims and goals and their beliefs and their attitudes. That must never shape our lives or the life of the church. All through the book of Genesis, when believing people and unbelieving people get mixed up together, God comes and separates them out again. And so the chapter ends with the verses describing this covenant agreement made by Abraham, which secures land rights for Abraham and his family, and for Isaac and his descendants. Verse 23, now swear to me here before God that you will not deal falsely with me or my children or my descendants. A covenant agreement that goes on to children and to children's children. What a great truth that God's promise of salvation in Jesus that has come to us as Christians goes on as the gift is opened up to our children and our children's children. Well, we leave it there. And we'll pick it up next time in chapter 22, asking the question, why does God put his people to the test? And what lessons in this testing that we read about in chapter 22 apply and are for us?